and welcome to episode number 119 of the Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and my guest today is the master of 5x5, Mr. Daniel Benjamin in Austin, Texas. Hey, Dan.
Hey, I can't believe it. You're back.
I'm back. What happened? I know. Thanks for having me back.
It's good to be here.
It's good to be back. I can't see you. I can only hear you.
Right. We don't have the video set up in this room. We've got a different video room that we're putting the finishing touches on. But I have the screen turned so that I can see you, and you're looking well there in New York.
Okay. I'm gonna put my picture on so you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the new Happy Cog office in the new space apart. So it's not the studio I used to record from. Everything's different.
Yeah, I remember the background. You used to have a white wall behind you, and now you've got a white wall behind you still.
Yes, but there's some glass in the corner.
Oh, nice.
It's, you know, if I had this office downtown, or if I had it in Brooklyn, or really any other city but New York, it could be like 17-foot tall wood ceilings, like raw birchwood or something, and it would be awesome. And or if I was in a startup and had someone else's money to play with, then I could have, you know, 14-foot ceilings and all that stuff. But I'm in Midtown Manhattan, and it costs so much, and so basically a rather conventional office. We've done what we could with it. We got the big red chair, right? It's a, I always call it an egg chair, but that's incorrect. And people say, oh, that's the chair from, what's that Will Smith movie where he's fighting aliens?
Men in Black, where he's sitting in the big chair and he slides the little thing over to fill out the form in the beginning.
Right, but that's more oval. This is perfectly circular. This one is by Eno Saarinen. And is it called, it's not called an egg chair. It has a different name. A ball chair, I think, which is sad, but a ball chair is what it's called. But so we have that and some like gray carpeting and really nice desks. So I wish I could see your studio. Because I feel like if we're back.
I know we got to do a little tour of it. Yeah, we've got a, you know, this office, I think the last time we did one together, I was in that tiny little shared office maybe, but now we've got a decent place to be with two different rooms. One is designed for just audio stuff, and the other one is designed for we're putting the finishing touches on it to do more videos. Because you remember back in the day we used to do video shows. We used to put out video shows. That was you and me doing that.
Yep, yep. And you were like live mixing the video.
Right. So we've got a much better setup to do that now. We've got a whole little room for it. Cause I've ever since those days, you know, I had to stop doing something. And I it's always tough. Like, what do you stop doing? You know?
Well, you told me then the problem was that the video was cool, but only like 1% of the audience was downloading it. And it was like 40% of the expense of production.
Exactly.
So it was one of those, from being from the web, it was one of those 80-20 things that didn't make sense.
That's totally true. We would get, you know, we'd get 40,000 downloads or whatever, and you get 800 people downloading the video. But that has changed so much since, I guess it was 4 years ago or so that I was doing that. And I mean, to be honest, the quality of the videos was the best I could do with very, very cheap equipment and no experience. So now it's much easier to do a higher quality video production. And to be honest, I've invested a bunch of time and money into making it great, because a lot more people do want to see video. And I think as long as you do a show that isn't just sort of the talking heads, but that brings more into it, that brings
like dancing,
yeah, singing and dancing, and it might be doing interviews, or it might be actually making a video. I love these sound effects that are going on.
Sorry, I forgot to turn off my phone. I'm an idiot.
But I thought that was your dancing music that I was with the segment.
Oh, like radio hacks, right? I push a button and there's like a hack sound effect. That's funny. No, but let's talk about internet radio a little bit, because that's what you do. And like what you have like 30 shows now?
Yeah, we've got over 30 shows on 5x5. I'm certainly not doing doing 30 shows myself. I'm actually trying to do fewer shows because you know, I want to focus and make the shows that I do really, really great. And but you know, back in the original days of starting this thing up, you know, you'd get a show and it would start to do well, but there's this, you know, tremendous challenge. And I think podcasters are in the same boat as people who create websites are, in that it's, you know, you can launch something and you can make a nice splash, and then it kind of tapers off and you see the people who are using it. How do you go from, whether it's 5,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 listeners or visitors or whatever your number is, to the next level? That happens, but it takes a long time. You know, it doesn't, that takes a while.
How do you keep
the
interest going? It's sort of like you just invented a sitcom, or you just invented Buffy the Vampire Slayer. How many seasons will it be great?
Yeah, how many will be great? How do you keep it great?
How do you keep it great? Yeah.
And so that was, you know, that my problem initially was, well, okay, great. This show is doing well. It's got 20,000 listeners. That's huge. It's really doing great. But getting it to 30, that'll happen, but that could take a year. Meanwhile, I've got, you know, I'm doing this full time. I've got more time. I could do another show, and that other show could probably get to 15 or 20,000 way before the first show will get to 40,000, you know?
Right.
I wound up doing a million shows, and it was too much.
You were like a record company, only you were all the bands. You were like a record company going, okay, this punk rock trio seems to be doing pretty well. How about let's try a new wave band and see what happens?
Yeah.
You're like throw it, but it's all you.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And I was, you know, I was crazy because I was like editing.
He's the guy who does American Dad. And
yeah.
Because he's like that. He's got like 5 TV shows, 3 movies. I mean, he was like finishing Ted and starting A Million Ways to Die in the West and running 2 major shows. And then he was doing a live action show called Dads. And, you know, obviously not all of them are going to be great. But I don't know how. It's hard to do multiple streams of content and control the quality.
Yeah.
And hats off to you, man. You're still in business. That's pretty good.
Yeah, the way that I did it is doing fewer shows myself, but working with other people who are doing really, really great shows and using the infrastructure that we built, which is both like the tech stuff, but also the people who are helping to produce and sell ads and the engineering and editing of the shows and the publishing platform and all that, and working with folks who are doing, like you, who are doing an awesome show and making it a place that they can go, and we can help them make their show awesome and take
like
some of the headache away.
You used to do a paleo show, and now someone else does that.
Oh, you know, he's always done that show. Yeah, he's doing, gosh, he's done a ton of episodes of that. Latest in paleo is the show that you're talking about, and he's up to like he's one up on you. He's already got his 119th episode out.
I wish I could do that diet because it is most definitely healthy. It's what our bodies were made to do, and that, you know, the stuff that I love, like bread and noodles, is the stuff that makes you fat and kills you.
Right.
And not eating that stuff means that you'll just naturally be lean and all that. And that's great. I want to do that. My problem, and we've talked about this in the past, I can't eat animals. I just can't do it. So it kind of limits me. But I noticed, like, when I play Minecraft with my daughter, I'm always like having pork chops.
In the game. Pork chops, yeah.
I have, yeah. I mean, I'm totally carnivorous in Minecraft. And she says, why don't you just have an apple? She's like, because she's 9. So she's a vegetarian, and she was sort of born a vegetarian. I didn't influence her, I don't think. But she would like get down on me for even eating fish. So I really try. And the problem with vegetables is, you know, well, it's easy to say I'm going to make a steak and then I'm going to have some broccoli and I'm done and it's a great meal.
Yeah.
It's harder when you're going like, what can we do with these beans? So, I don't know. But I eat a lot of meat in Minecraft. Are you a gamer at all in your spare time? Are your kids gaming yet? They're a little bit too young for it, right?
Yeah, my boy, the older one of my two kids, he's 6, and he's way hardcore into iPad games. Like it is his favorite thing to do. So yeah, he plays that. He has played Minecraft on there, but it's not high on his list. He's more into, you know, games that involve destruction and violence more than building right now.
Like the zombies, your yard, that kind of game.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Oh, and Avengers and the games that involve the Adventure Time people punching things and all of that.
Those are fun. Has he played BMO from Adventure Time? It's a really simple
Yeah, he had that. He played that for a little while, yeah.
They're as weird and they're as off the beaten track as the show itself.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's not one of those things where they sold the franchise, like The Simpsons. I enjoy The Simpsons game, and I think I've spent like $10,000 on it. And by I've spent, I mean my daughter did accidentally, because it's very easy to make in-house purchases. If you eat some donuts now, then you won't have to wait 18 hours while Apu changes the labels on the milk.
Right.
The content of it is great, because again, everything comes back to content. The content of it is great, but the game is totally evil. And they clearly just, you know, they're making money, fine. But what I like about the Adventure Time games is that they're just sort of abstract and like Adventure Time.
I love that show and I love the games, and they do a bunch of stuff. Like they'll run these commercials and they'll be actually an advertisement for like a game, but you have to go to the website to play the game, and you can't get it on the iPad. And my kid doesn't browse the web. Everything is an app that we download that he plays. You know?
Huh.
Yeah. Your kid browse? Does your kid use the internet?
Yeah, mostly she does YouTube. I mean, mostly she's interested in, and she has dyslexia, so she's not a great speller. So she'll say to me, type down. How to tame a horse in Minecraft. So type down, I mean, obviously that's a very basic thing. She's way past that.
But right.
How to craft Archer's Gold in the Witchery mod or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. So do you play with him? Do you sit with him sometimes and just watch him play? How do you?
He
amuses himself.
He every single thing that he does in any game, dad, watch. So yes, I definitely watch him play, whether I want to or not.
Yes, you can't. I mean, I'm sure there are, like, I was the kind of kid that just went in a corner and amused myself and I didn't really care.
Yeah.
But my daughter's the same way. She wants to do stuff, but she wants me to do it with her, which I actually like.
Right.
I'm actually kind of grateful because it would be just so easy for me to say, like, for her to sit in a corner doing something and me to like work on web stuff.
Yeah, that never happens in my house. Speaking of working on web stuff, since you started the internet, a lot has changed. What have you been doing with it recently, in the web especially? What have you made it into recently?
Yeah, that's a tough question for me. I mean, obviously HappyCog, our studio, is going strong, doing well, doing stuff for clients, interesting, you know, big brands and educational clients. But I wouldn't hire me to work at HappyCog if I were out of a job right now, unless it was to hire me as a strategist or something, some like vague, semi-bullshit title. But I wouldn't hire myself as a designer or a front-end developer. The field has kind of passed me by in a way, and it scares me. It scares me for people who've been doing this for a long time, because you have to keep...
Pat, when you say passed you by, though,
okay,
does that mean... break this down for me, because
sure.
I'll tell you why I want to understand that. Do you mean that it's because you are not spending 8+ hours a day, 5+ days a week writing HTML and CSS and running Photoshop and...
Right, bingo. So I'm not in Photoshop and CSS, you know, and a text editor all day long anymore, and haven't been for about 5 years, because there's the Event Apart conference, there's a List Apart magazine. I pushed myself more into content creation and let the Gregs, Greg Hoy and Greg Story run Happy Cog, mm-hmm. and they're brilliant, and they, you know, I'm involved, but I'm not that involved because you can't do everything. So, again, getting back to sort of why your network is still around is because, you know, you focused on radio and said, okay, I'm going to stop doing web development now. So I'm surrounded by people who work on projects with me, and I, you know, look over their shoulders and hear them talk. But I also, I mean, people snicker. I remember like, okay, I'll tell you two quick stories. I did my first website 1995, 1996, and right afterwards, one of my partners, Alec Pollock, became a creative director at another agency, and he went away. And I went and saw him like 1996, 1997, because IE3 was supporting primitive CSS, and I was so turned on by CSS, and I was like, "Can you see? Do you see this? We're going to be able to do layouts like this. This is amazing." And he's like, "Yeah, I can't really." He was a great guy, but he had already moved into a strategic position. And I was like, oh man, never stop coding, never stop comping, never lose your hand skills, because then you become a manager. And then, so that's what I thought then. And I really, you know, when I wrote Designing with Web Standards, I was coding all the time and I was designing all the time. And I, you know, but the success of some of the things I've done propelled me into a more creative director role and then a more managerial role. And so now...
But why is that bad? You say it like it's bad.
It's not bad. I just feel... So the other... like 2 years ago, we were starting the Illust Apart redesign, and I'm sitting there with Tim Murtaugh, the coder, and Mike Pick, the designer. And I there was something... and there was some detail of the design, and I said, well, you'll just have to... what was it? I said some like pathetic IE6 hack came out of my mouth. I was like, well, you'll have to make that a background image so that it doesn't, you know, break out of the containing box. And he just looked at me like I'd said, light the candles so we can put on the stage play for the king. And I just looked, he said, yeah, you don't have to do that anymore. And with this little smile, sort of, and that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I've turned into Alec Pollock. And that's great. Alec Pollock's a great guy. Alec, don't, if you're listening to this, not putting you down, buddy, you're an awesome guy. I just mean I've turned into more of a creative managerial type and less of a hands-on person. And, you know, so, I mean, I run a conference. I'm at a part where the other speakers are talking about real hands-on stuff, and I have to sort of give a big picture talk every year. And I, you know, I kind of wish I was still... And here's the other thing. If you're coding all the time, that's how you get an idea that might be the next big thing.
Mm.
Once you're not coding anymore all the time, and once you're not in, you know, in Photoshop all the time, it's hard to like do something that everyone looks at. The people who work for you do something that everyone looks at. People who work with you. It's not the same. So,
you know, but I totally hear what you're saying, because as much as I was doing, I've never been that much of a designer per se, but I've been definitely in the web development, writing code, and that always, if you're
brilliant at that, you're brilliant at that.
Well, you're too kind. But if you are doing development where you're doing, whether it's Rails or PHP or Java or whatever you like using, and notice I intentionally didn't mention Python. But if you're doing, you know, if you're writing software and you're doing it for the web, you'll have to be at least friendly toward HTML and CSS and vice versa. I find that the best designers are the ones who, I'm not saying that they should have a deep understanding of Rails or PHP, but they should understand how those pieces work together. And
yeah,
you know, I still spend a lot of time writing code, and I'm trying not to write any code. You know, my goal is to hand it off, and I found a great designer and a really great developer, and I'm transitioning all of this stuff off to them. But I often find that, and I don't know if you've found this or if you're simply removed from this process, but, you know, so here's a perfect example, short story. There, we have an advertiser portal so that somebody who sponsors a show, they can log into this system, and it will show them all of the shows that they've sponsored, and it allows them to go in and they can play, and it'll jump right to their spot so they don't have to try and scrub through to find it. And there's tons of other features in there that, but you know, that kind of gives you the idea of this is what sponsors, you know, they really want is to know how's the show performing? What about downloads and, you know, tracking and all this stuff. So we provide all that data for them in a really nice way. And well, I had hired a you know, when we needed this and we needed it really, really quickly because we had some sponsors that were like, well, other shows give us data like this and we really need you to do it. Later come to find out that they didn't. They just really wanted it. But
my daughter does that when I'm in the bathroom. Daddy, I need to go. I need to go. I'll be right out. Come on, hurry, Daddy. I really need to go. And then I come out and go, are you okay? And she's like, I didn't need to go. I just wanted you out of there.
Yeah.
That's probably more information than you needed.
No, but that's exactly right. And so I said, listen, I know that I'm not going to be able to code. I know that I could code this thing up, but they want it in 2 weeks. And there's no way with shows and production and everything else I could do it in 2 weeks. So I hired a company to do it, a local company here. And they did a great job. And they built something that did essentially what they needed. But I will say, from my standpoint, it was wrong. And what do I mean by wrong?
I totally know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like the user interface was not – and it's not just – it wasn't the way that I would have done it, which it very much wasn't. But it was just – they didn't really get what it was that we needed to do. It did the –
they didn't understand the business logic.
Right, right.
They complied with – they built what you asked them to build.
Right.
And they were clever about it
yeah.
and very competent and skilled and you'd recommend them, but they didn't have their heart in the business. I found in the web design business, and we do this at Happy Cog too, you basically want to take jobs that you believe in. And so because you really need to understand the business. If you don't understand the brand and you don't understand the value they bring to people and how people want to use it and you aren't curious about whether stuff fails and then you aren't willing to test and everything, then it's not going to be great. It's going to be very competent. And very competent is fine, but you want to be great. And everything we do, we want to be great. And I totally get that. And I have a hard time with all of this. I have become... So first of all, nobody does what we do and isn't a control freak. One of the worst dinners I was ever... It was actually a great dinner. But Jared Spool took a bunch of web designers to dinner at this place in Cambridge. And Jared is a great guy. But... everyone, they were like UX consultants and designers and front-end developers. And he said, how about we just do this family style and I'll order about 10 things for the table. And at first everyone said yes. And then like Mike Montero turned to me and said, wait a minute, is he picking my food? And I was like, yeah, I'm not really comfortable with that either. And nobody at that table was comfortable. Now, the guy had been eating at this restaurant for like 20 years. He knew everything that was great. He knew, because he'd eaten with all of us, he knew like who's a vegetarian and who likes this and who likes that. He knew all that stuff. He was going to do a fine job, but we were relinquishing control and that's very, very hard. So part of my problem as a, and this happens to anyone who's in any field long enough, you begin to have to manage other people and you don't want to train them to do it the way you do it. I had a creative director when I was in advertising who he was great at turning out little clones of himself. He was a brilliant guy, but you basically, the only work he was going to approve was the kind of work he would have done.
Yeah.
And that was brilliant award-winning work, but it was his kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do that. I don't think, I'm lesser than him, but I want everyone to be themselves. I think that's their strength. But at the same time, it's hard because, you know, even the blurbs for a List Apart articles that don't get written by me. They get written by Wonder now, and they used to. It's hard because I'll look at it and go, and this is great. And I'll go, it's not quite me. And of course, it's not supposed to be me. It's supposed to be a List Apart. And the thing keeps evolving, right? So everything you do keeps evolving and you have to hand off. But it's hard. And I have, you know, I have an easier time with design because I see myself as really like mediocre at best. And there's so many better designers than me that to me, it's just a wonder and a delight. Like to see what other people do with an idea. I feel like I might come in there to like tell them something they're unaware of because, you know, like you need a button here or yeah, we should probably have the name of the product on the page or whatever. But basically their sparkling creativity delights me and it's easier. Writing is harder for me and code is hard for me. I can't even imagine people who use frameworks, and I know that everyone does now.
Yeah.
But when I was coding, the idea that someone else was going to name my classes or someone else was going to have non-semantic I mean, I remember when everyone was into grids right before Ethan Marcotte developed responsive design, everyone was like, here's 960 plus. And,
yeah.
And people were writing like column, like class A plus B plus C plus D or whatever. And it's like, that works and you can prototype something like that. But why would you memorize? It was like, to me, it's like, well, then I might as well just use Dreamweaver, right? I might as well. In fact, basically what I'm saying is I'm a control freak, and the joy, but also the struggle of growing up in an industry and handing off work to other people is that you really have to stay open-minded and not try to control every last thing.
Yeah. No, you do. And I wound up rewriting that portal myself, you know, and that's not what I wanted to do.
And you didn't need to do that, really, or did you?
I really had to, because the business logic didn't work, and it was not even close to being what we really needed, and I wound up doing it. But then, you know, now getting a developer and a designer and having the ability to work with them when there's more time, and to essentially you have to, in order, people are always like, oh, you know, it's about control. Well, it really, in another way, it isn't. It's about hiring people who are, and you know this, hiring people who are better than you at those things and taking the time with them to teach them what they need to know or more from your brain so that they can do what they do better. You know what I mean?
Yes. You're talking about being a good client. It gives you compassion for clients, and why sometimes a client, you know, in some of the work I've done, maybe a client wasn't totally happy. And now I understand I didn't take the time to learn everything, or they weren't able to convey, you know, the greatest clients kind of like overwhelm you with data.
Yep.
And you kind of have to want that. You know, you don't go off like, I'm a genius designer, I'll solve this. But it's like, I have some more questions about your business. You have to wear them out.
Yeah. No, you totally do. And there is that thing that happens when you realize, like, you know, like you're talking about realizing, and I've definitely realized that the people who are doing this stuff every day, and because we're not, the people who are doing it every day and the people who love to do it every day and are excited about doing it every day, they're going to be better and they're going to be faster. And
yep,
what we have, because we've been doing it for a million years, is we've failed so many times, right?
Yes.
That we can help. The best thing that I feel like I can do is help somebody not fail as often as I did, basically. And that's, you know, that's what I try to do is, you know, here's someone will say, oh, well, I was going to do it like this. What do you think? And I'll say, that's a great idea. And then they'll come back and say, well, that was going to do this other thing like this. What do you think? And I say, let's not do it that way, because I did it that way once and here's what happened. And what do you think? And I'm like, oh, right. I didn't think of that. I'll try it this other way. But I think that's our value now is knowing how to help people not screw up as much as we did.
Or the value is like, and Hoy and Story, Greg Hoy and Greg Story, the same thing. Like the value in part is just like, this smells like a project with doom written all over it. Or this smells like having a sense of a client that's going to, you know, that's going to communicate, having a sense of, you know, even though everything looks good on the surface, knowing when it's really not.
Right.
It's sort of like in theory, when you start dating, you know, go out with anybody cute. And then supposedly you work until you, like, you're married now, you know, you find someone that you can actually love and be compatible with and not, you know, for the long haul. And it's different than just, you know, they're cute. It's more. And that, so that's our experience is what we have. Yeah. I just wandered into a pointless analogy when you'd already explained it perfectly well.
No,
my value. My value now is to sort of jither on in a room.
No, I think there's this strange time that you get to when especially in the space of web design and web development or software development, where things are changing so fast. Like, we finally got these sort of, you know, even in something like PHP, where that's been the Wild West since the beginning, we even have frameworks there that are really great, you know. And you mentioned frameworks from the design standpoint. Of course, there's frameworks in the development world just as well. And, you know, you pick the language that you like, whether it's PHP or Ruby or Python or something else. And then you can pick the framework within that context that makes sense. And of course, I do most things and have done most things in Rails for a long time. But, you know, there are many frameworks there. You've got, you've got Rails, but if you just like Ruby, you can do Sinatra, you can do other things. And it's been really interesting because I used to be the guy that knew how to do everything. Like you used to be the guy in the web that knew how to do everything. And you knew these little tricks that, like, oh, if you're doing this and this in IE, it's going to do this. You've got to worry about it. And, you know, and it's like your story at the beginning where, oh yeah, we don't need to do that anymore. I find that the time that it takes for me to explain the business logic or the business reasons to somebody is much, much less than, oh, I'll just do it myself. Because once they understand that piece, they're going to be a better developer, but they know that Ruby gem that came out that lets you do X, Y, Z really, really quickly and really, really effectively. And I could write it, but I've got to, is there a gem for that? Oh, there's three. Well, which one is better? Well, this one has this many stars on GitHub, and this one's been forked this many times.
No, I think the people who have their hands on it know all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think somebody, you know, like Anna Debenham or Matt Marquis knows all that stuff and knows, like, yeah, here's the 42 different things that are out there that do this job, and here's why these three are best. But here's the problem with, you know, they have really strong opinions about all that stuff. And it's weird now. I'm getting nostalgic for some of the old, like, I can remember when you could get a client because you could land that, not only could you design their site, but you'd get it on Yahoo's homepage.
Yeah.
You could get it on Yahoo's homepage.
Yeah. Like, you knew how to make that happen.
You knew how to make that happen. and I'll tell you what the trick was too. You had to set it up to the local Yahoo. So, like, if you're in Austin, mm-hmm. and you try to get the thing on the homepage, it's not going to happen. But if you get it into a category for, like, when Yahoo was very, like, acting local, you get it on the austin.yahoo.whatever, and then boom, it would get up to regular Yahoo automatically, because it would, like, I remember the world before Google. Like, our kids are never going to know the world before iPhones and iPads. And
right.
What's your platform of choice now? Obviously, we all have to be familiar with everything, but when you're just enjoying yourself, you're not an Android person, obviously.
No.
Or Windows Phone. I mean, you play with those things?
Yeah, definitely. I did an experiment. I was going to try, there were two reasons for it. I wanted to try using a phone that had a larger screen on the one hand, which automatically meant not an iPhone. And on the other hand, I like to know what's going on, not so much in the Windows Phone space, but in the Android space. It's, I talk about this stuff on shows all the time. So it would be a disservice to the listeners for me to say, oh, Android sucks, if I didn't actually use Android and determine for myself that it sucked. And by the way, it does not suck. But I wanted to try living in the world of Android, in the ecosystem of Android, in the app world of Android. And I wanted to do it for a whole month. I didn't quite make it a whole month. But in the weeks that I was that I was using it, I learned a whole lot about Android, and there is a lot to like. But no, it's not my default. It's not my default by any stretch of the imagination. I have a wonderful iPad Air that I absolutely love, but I don't use it as much as I want to use it. Mostly, my iPhone is the main thing.
Yeah,
that's the main device, like,
definitely,
first and foremost. But second to that, I've got an 11-inch MacBook Air that I use so much and love using it. And there's no hurdles to jump through. And because I still am involved, even though I'm not doing as much code as I used to, for me, just knowing that, oh, I need to remotely connect to that server, or I do need to write some code and deploy it, or I just want to have a ton of tabs open, you know, little things like that You can do them on an iPad, but they just, for me, it's still faster and more immediate when you're doing it on you know, on an actual computing device like a laptop, as opposed to the iPad system, that you can do those things, but it switching tabs, there isn't a keyboard command for it because there isn't a keyboard for it. And there's,
well, so, you know,
and for reading, I'm still on a Kindle. I've got a Kindle Paperwhite that I'm obsessed with. I love thing.
I love having every book I've ever read.
Yeah.
On a device. I think that's amazing. But how do you feel about the obscuring from the user of certain information? Like, for instance, in the browsers now, in some desktop browsers, and of course, and it started on devices, the URL is obscured, or the URL is partial.
Can't stand it.
So you
hate it.
Right?
It's the worst. I don't understand this.
If we hadn't had 20 years of it, and they're like, this is too hard for people to understand. It's like, well, people have obviously been using it for 20 years. So.
Here's the thing. I don't know. Maybe this shows our legacy brain muscle memory, right? But like, I look at the URL a lot. There's certain sites that I know I don't look at. For example, like Amazon with
million it's gonna be meaningless.
Query parameters on the location bar. It's meaningless, right? But for other types of sites, of course I look at that. If I'm shopping on Archie McPhee to get some new gag gift, like, of course I'm going to look at that URL. And so URLs, I think, still matter, but I think the trend is for them to not matter at all. They're, you know, they don't want them to matter.
I get it. I mean, we're always saying, don't make me think. This is what, you know, Steve Krug taught the industry. Apple used to say, for the rest of us. I mean, they've been saying that for 20 years, a computer for the rest of us, meaning you don't have to learn Unix commands, right? You don't have to learn like Windows. What was the thing underlying Windows? How can I forget that?
DOS?
DOS. You don't have to learn DOS.
MS-DOS, right? Yeah.
Which was, I remember like, kind of freaking out when OS X came out. I'm like, wait, so now there's underlying commands and there's a command structure and it's good. Now I have to learn Unix, and that's a good, I mean, of course I'm a web person, so it wasn't a problem, but like, I was just going, looking at their internal logic of like, wow, you're really changing a marketing message you've drilled into my head for 15 years. But I don't know. I kind of like letting users see all that stuff. I don't like it when I select a URL in the browser and start to, or I don't like it when the same field lets me search or type a URL. In theory, that's good. And I like it when it works right, but I don't like it when I type an actual URL and then it sends me to Google to look up that thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, or I start typing it and it auto-corrects and then sends me to Google. I'm not helpless with, and I don't really want to be protected from technology. And I don't think it's in people's interest to have the technology obscured. I think it's in their interest to understand how the technology works so that they're not getting taken advantage of and tricked and deceived by the unscrupulous people who sometimes use technology for bad.
Right. And you know, but I totally get the idea. Like, when I was in high school, I was really into like cars and working on cars and fixing cars and doing things with cars and working on the engines and going to say, oh man, this alternator's bad. Well, I'm going to take out the alternator myself and I'm going to disassemble it myself and I'm going to figure out what's wrong with it. And then I'm going to go to like the junkyard and find an alternator and a wrecked version of a car that will be compatible with this car. And I'll get that thing. I'll bring it back. I'll put it back together and make it work. Like, that kind of stuff was fun. And the idea that I could go and I might not exactly know how to do it, but I could get the Chilton's manual and I could figure this thing out and I could work on it. And I could fix this thing that was broken and save money and learn something and have some fun in the process. And of course, when you're in high school, you know, you have time to do this kind of crap. But the point of it is, when you are when you have that knowledge, you know that should something happen with a vehicle, there's a chance that you could maybe fix it, but probably figure out what it was and know how to handle the situation. And then as newer cars started to come out, the idea of an individual human doing something even as straightforward or previously as straightforward as changing the oil. Well, of course I changed the oil in all of my cars back then. Of course, like that was a given that I would do that. But, you know, then I remember getting a car and the oil filter, the position of the oil filter was darn near impossible to reach. And I took it to go to the dealership and I got the oil change. I said, you know, I used to change the oil myself. He's like, oh yeah, and that one you really can't. I'm like, well, like it's designed that way. They're like, well, you know, the way they do the spacing of the engine compartment, everything else, we have a special thing that gets us up in there to let it change it. But yeah, it's not really something people do on their own. And that is pretty
it's
much
sad.
Yeah, it is sad, but it's pretty much normal now. Look at, you know, most of the people who are listening to this show, if they were to go out and if they could figure out how to open the hood of their car, they'll probably have no idea how they would. They can probably put the washer fluid in, but that's about it. And that's the way that they want it. And this is what's going on with URLs and with browsers and with all of this stuff is that they're sealing it up. They're painting over it and they're making it so that you don't need to look in there anymore.
You're a helpless consumer.
Right.
And you just buy the new one. I did music when I was young and I had a music studio. And before I had a studio, I was like using somebody else's. Like I had a roommate. He said, if you move in, you can use my 4-track studio.
Oh, nice.
That dates it. And so I moved in because they needed someone to help pay the rent. And he said, he was going away for a week. I said, can I use your studio? He said, yeah, don't worry. And then I guess he had second thoughts. So he unplugged everything.
Why?
But that's so he like disconnected all the wiring for his studio. So I spent half a day wiring it back because he had told me that I could. So, you know, I didn't look at it as, oh, he's, you know, he did a passive aggressive thing, but I was like, you know what? I can figure this out because I've hooked up stereos because it used to be, right? You didn't like drop a thing into another thing and it was done. You know, you'd get a pliers and you'd connect, you know, you'd wire everything up yourself and you'd do it with your dad, let's say. So, it was basically just like a really fancy hi-fi, a really fancy stereo system, really fancy, you know. Right. And I, you know, there were a lot of problems with analog and there's a lot of things now you can do musically, you know, in a digital studio that you could not do. But this is going to sound awful, but I think a lot of stuff is like super overproduced as a result because they can get perfection and I can't even listen to it. There's this guy, Sam Harris or Sam, I think his name's Sam Harris. It's not the kind of music I normally listen to. He was this white guy with like a little, he looks a little bit like Pee Wee Herman. And he was singing on Saturday Night Live. And I was like, wow, this guy's amazing. It's an episode where, who's the host is, oh, this is awful. Why am I doing this? A comedian that we love, like a 40-year-old comedian who has a show, Louis, right? Louis C.K.
Oh, yeah.
Louis C.K. was the host. And he was like, wasn't Sam Harris amazing? And the guy was amazing singing live. So we got the CD and it's terrible because, not because of the singer, but because someone said, we really got to make this commercial and perfect. And there's so much gloss on it. I'm not saying it's terrible. But, I mean, I'm sure there are people who love it. But I was like, I don't even want to hear this. I wanted to hear the guy singing. I mean, I don't know. Imagine, it's remarkable to me when someone's talent can, you know, can actually transcend the technology that's turning them into a product. When someone can actually be musical in spite of all the perfection technology that's being used on them. So this is weird because I made, technology is what I do. And I guess I have a more mixed feeling about it.
Yeah.
That's good. You know what? If you work with guns, then you have complicated feelings about guns. Whereas your feelings might be simpler if you didn't use guns.
Mm-hmm.
You'd just be like, I hate guns, period. But if you actually had, you know, if you're a police officer, let's say, and using a gun is part of your work, you'd have a more nuanced.
That's right.
Speaking of nuance, we really need to thank our sponsor today.
Oh, yeah.
MailChimp. MailChimp.com. I use them. That's who I use. I love them. MailChimp means easy newsletters, easy email newsletters. MailChimp helps you design newsletters, share them on social networks, integrate with services you already use, and track your results. It's like your own personal publishing platform. They help you customize your sign-up form to match your brand so you can share it on your website and integrate it into your Facebook page.
That's key. Everybody's on the social networks.
Right.
You know, you can integrate all of this stuff. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And now I expect that. Anytime I use anything, I expect it. When something's a walled garden and it doesn't connect to the other walled gardens, I get upset. It's like, you know what? Your photo app can be a world unto itself, but I still want it to touch the web somewhere, and I want it to connect to Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter, and you know, I expect that.
Yeah,
and that's what MailChimp delivers. You can even collect signups for an iPad or a laptop.
Right, it's like, so like you're at a trade show or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like the same way you can, you know, you can take credit cards from people with, what is it, Square?
Yeah. Yeah, so you're there, you're at the trade show, you say, oh, come on here, over here, you know, well, you know, and they type it in right there on the
app. Do you have a mail list? Yeah, I do. Here, give me your name.
Boom.
Done.
Boom. Done.
Importing an existing list into MailChimp is a snap, no matter what its format is, and you can depersonalize everything your subscribers see, including sign-up forms and confirmation emails. That's important if you have a brand. If you're a designer, it's really important that your organization's stuff looks like your organization and not like somebody else's. And MailChimp gives you the ability. They give you lots of templates and stuff that you can start with, and they give you all the ability to customize. And there's never been a better time to try MailChimp. With their entrepreneur plan, if you have under 2,000 subscribers, you can send 12,000 emails per month forever.
Not crazy. But they have to go to the special magic URL to get that,
they
I think.
They do, Dan. Do you want to know the URL?
Tell me what it is. Assuming that I'll be able to see it.
Because you want a browser or a device that actually doesn't obscure the URL.
Right.
Correct. Well, you would just, to take advantage of this amazing offer, you would just go to MailChimp.com/5x5 to learn more. And 5x5, of course, is numeral 5, BY numeral 5.
Numerals.
Numerals, all one word. MailChimp.com/5x5. MailChimp.com/5x5. Well, there you go. You know what? There's there alone. If you take away our URLs, browsers and device makers, if you take away our URLs, then we can't take advantage of special offers from MailChimp.
That's right. That's the main reason to keep them.
And homie, don't play that. We should just do 90s talk for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I think so.
Homie, don't play that.
Yeah.
Oh no, you didn't.
Talking times 10.
Oh no.
Did you ever say that one? Times 10?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, we used to say that. Thanks, MailChimp. Yeah, anytime we would say something, it was like good. Like, and someone wanted to agree with you, they'd be like,
times 10.
Times 10. What do you think of this thing that they do now? I noticed this first at the not the last Apple keynote, but the one before that. I think it was the one, or maybe a couple before that, where they announced the Mac Pro, where they, when they were talking about speed, they would say, oh, this thing has 8x performance compared to, and they were saying times, 8 times the performance. But instead of 8 times, they will say 8x.
I've heard people say OS X too.
Oh, I've heard that too. That, but
I don't know why.
Makes
me
cry every time that.
Why
I don't,
do they do that?
I don't know. But
I
what
realize
do you think
that
of this,
I'm,
like,
I'm a minority on GIF. I know that.
You say GIF?
Because that's what the creator called it. So
I said GIF until the big GIF thing happened with this new generation of designers coming out saying, no, it's not GIF. That's peanut butter. It's GIF. And so I, out of respect, taught myself to say GIF.
I haven't done that, and I don't think about it. I don't really, it's not a format that comes up very often anymore, except when it's like animated GIFs. I have friends who, this is all, we're the Alyssa Part staff and contributors. They're on Slack and just constantly shooting animated GIFs at each other all day long. Mm-hmm. This is what they do instead of talking. They're all very articulate. They're all very bright, but, you know. And where do they all come from? I remember making them. Don't you remember making them?
Yeah, I do.
The tools that, it's like, think of the graveyard of software that we've used in our lifetime. I don't even remember the name of the first thing I used to export animated GIFs from like a QuickTime movie that was like a 45K QuickTime movie that was probably 200 by 150.
Yeah, there was software out there that would let you go and take, you would, I forget what it was. It was definitely the one that I used. I had to use a PC to do it. But you'd be able to take this, you know, whether you could take like images that you'd strung together yourself, or you could convert a movie that was like QuickTime format or something else. And right. It would split it up into frames. And you could say, what do you want it to do when you get to the end? Do you want it to loop? How many times should it loop? Just once, forever?
You know, I think there was a Netscape tag where you said whether it looped or not. Wasn't there?
Probably was.
I think there was a Netscape tag. And it's like, you must use... Don't be using IE2 to visit this website because we've got looping GIFs.
That's right, looping GIFs. And, you know, the weird thing about it is that, you know, there are people in the audience who are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of Netscape.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the funny thing is that I work with people who are incredibly talented, who I respect, who just, they have a completely different concept that they have never been a mature thinking human. I'm not saying 18. I'm saying that most of their life, when they think back to it, you know, Google was there and you could just go and look things up. And I remember, you know, when I was trying to decide, like, what college should I go to? I went to the library and there were like catalogs from different colleges in the library. And I sat in the library and read books in the library to see which college I might want to go to. And my choices as a high school student were the couple that my parents suggested, and then the ones that I read about that had nice brochures in the library of my high school. And the idea of like, that was how all of the high school students figured it out. It's either their parents said to go here, or they read catalogs in a library to decide what college to go to.
I went where my friend went.
Right.
My friend, I lived in Pennsylvania. The bass player in my band went to Indiana because they had a good music school. And he actually got into their music school. So I went to Indiana, didn't get into the music school. And et cetera.
It's just, it's crazy because the idea of like, all you have in your pocket, this device that can answer almost any question you have. Like, well, how old is Sean Connery? Oh, okay. You know, you know the answer instantaneously.
My ex-wife used to get mad when I would pull out my iPhone to answer. Like, we'd be going...
They all do. So they all get angry.
She'd be like, no, like Sean Connery's... Let's say, she said, like... this didn't happen, but if she said, like, Sean Connery's Irish, and I go, I'm pretty sure he's Scottish. I'll make me the guy with the person with the wrong answer. Sorry. Sorry, ex-wife. And she'd say, like, Sean Connery's Scottish. I'd be, I'm pretty sure he's Irish. I'd have to look it up on IMDb and, like, over 3G. And, you know, in a few minutes, I had my answer over the 3G network of AT&T. It's, you know, our kids' touchscreens are just what they know.
Yeah.
It took a long time for my daughter to be able to use a desktop computer because there's so many layers of abstraction and weirdness.
Yeah, it's always interesting because the first computer device that my older kid had, and my younger one too, but he's having more experience directly with computers now because of school. She really only thinks of the computer as this thing on the desk at home that we don't want her to touch. She can use the touch devices, but not the computer. And, you know, I remember the first time that he did it, of course, he tried touching the screen and it didn't do anything. I said, no, you move this thing around and it moves the little arrow on the screen. And he's like, in his mind, like he got it immediately, but there was this sense of, and we've talked about this, I think a long time ago, a sense of like, well, why would you do that? And I imagine that in time, especially with school, he'll learn the value of using a computer as well. But it's funny that it, how much sense it makes for the touch experience to be the first experience for people as they learn, as opposed to the second or third one for people like us who grew up with typewriters and then computers and, you know, and then touch devices. It's interesting.
In the new Windows, basically, if you're making a computer for Windows, you have to have a touch screen. Basically, you have to, for the laptops, you have to have a detachable touch screen.
Right.
It's a rule.
Yeah.
So in the future, this will just be a given on, and eventually we won't be using screens either, of course, like, you know.
Minority Report.
I will always love my screen. But it's also weird how I can smear my thumb. I can eat a jelly sandwich and smear my left thumb all over this expensive little device that I keep in my pocket.
Right.
But if anyone touches my desktop computer screen or my laptop computer, I get really like, I act cool, but inside I'm seething. You know, when you're like showing someone a design and they're like, yeah, could you move that? And I'm like, I don't even care what they're saying. It's just like, you're touching my screen.
You know, I totally know what you mean, but what changed that for me from the obsessive OCD level to tolerance was the glossy instead of the matte screens. Because if you touched one of those matte screens that we had for years, those things were impossible to clean. The glossy ones now, you can just wipe that thing down without ruining it.
Yeah, that makes sense. The thing now is that little bits of condensation that occur naturally, at least this is my experience with a big 27-inch IMAX. There's this sort of little bits of condensation forming the glass, just darkening little areas slightly, which you notice when you're doing photography.
Right, yeah.
And when you're doing anything with a white background, like reading an email, reading anything digital, composing something that you're going to share with someone else. So I'm constantly looking at it and I can never clean it. It'll never go away because it's inside the computer. The color's inside the computer.
Granite Manet in the chat room says, my sister, a teacher, had her kids act out writing a letter and 70% of them motioned like a text message. Only 30% mimicked typing on a keyboard.
Right, and if they were Android users, they would just do the thing where they swirl their finger in the air because it's so smart, it knows what letter you glide over a bunch of letters and it knows which one you meant.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that so many of the things that I liked about Android when I was using it exclusively, so many of those things are coming to iOS 8. And you mentioned the keyboard, like swipe keyboard, for example, which was the thing that after using Android for a few weeks, going back to the iPhone, which is currently my favorite device, you know, it was one of those things that it's especially like if you've got a kid on one arm and you're trying to type something on the other, something like swipe keyboards are really, really great. But there's so much that's still changing that we're still learning about when it comes to creating a touch interface that makes sense. It's still so much in its infancy. We've had, you know, 10s and 20, 30 years to get computers to where they are. And the evolution, the pace of the evolution of touch devices, it's amazing how much has happened since the iPhone first came out.
It's amazing. It's only 7 years and we have 20 years worth of stuff to unlearn. Luke Rablewski says this, he's doing a mobile workshop and he said, all these things that we think we're approaching, if we're designing mobile experiences, we're approaching them with a desktop mindset. And basically everything we're thinking is probably wrong, you know, from context to, a form comes up and I already have an input. The form and the input device are in the same place. It's just different. Everything's different. Mm-hmm. Think like that. So, it's very challenging and very exciting. So I guess that brings us back to the, feeling like you're kind of out of the loop. I'm really excited about all the things that are happening, but I'm not hands-on. So it's sort of like, I guess it's like you were burned alive in this horrible disaster and they managed to save your brain and put it in a computer. And now you're reading sex manuals. You're a computer and you're reading all these sex manuals and going, wow, there's so much I could do if I had a body. Well, this sounds really interesting. I just wish I had a body because, golly, I don't know. We'll get another pointless analogy, but I'm really constantly keeping up with everything that we can do and thinking about it, but I'm not coding it, if that makes sense.
Right, right. You're still solving the problems, but you're not necessarily the person who's doing the implementation of the solution that you've come up with. But I don't see that as a bad thing.
No, it's not. It's not a bad thing. The world needs people with their hands in it, and the world needs people like just, who understand that, but do something else.
And I think there's a lesson in there for me, and I don't know if you've run into this, is unlike the situation where I had those guys do the portal thing and it was just plain wrong, not something that, and that wasn't a situation that I'm about to describe. It wasn't the way I liked it to be, because a lot of the time, and this is the lesson that I've learned, is just because it isn't the way that I might have done it doesn't mean that it's not good or potentially even better than the way that I might have done it. It's different. And different, you know, I use websites all the time. I'm like, I wish this one did work like this, and I wish they moved this thing over here, but I'll just deal with it. But, you know, usually those decisions, even if I might not like them, you know, come from experience. Look at the version of Basecamp we have now compared to the version we had a few years ago.
I'm still using the old one for some of my projects because I need to be able to write HTML inside it, and I need to be able to use text editing piece, text document sharing piece, whose name I am blanking on, because that's what I didn't eat lunch. I worked out, and I didn't eat lunch.
You got to eat. Did you eat breakfast at least?
I did. I had 2 hard-boiled eggs. So
that's all?
Yeah, I'm going to have udon later, so you can't have that, but I can.
2 eggs. I don't know what I wouldn't make it. I eat tons of eggs.
Okay. I love
load
eggs.
Load it up. Well, where? Okay, so this brings me.
Back to the dashboard. No, so sponsorship on Slack chats. Write boards. I need write boards.
Yeah.
I need write boards. So even though it's ugly, it looks very, you know, 2005.
Yeah.
It's not really ugly. Ugly is the wrong word. It's mired in 2005. It's not, you know, it's using, a less than optimal font.
Yeah, I can't. Now that I've been on the new one, yeah, and we spend so much time at Basecamp. Like, we do everything now in Basecamp. It's to the point, and part of this is because email, and I was talking to Merlin Mann on Back to Work earlier in the week about this, is that email for me has become, unfortunately, just it's a black hole. I still get to it. I still do it, but it's very slow for me. But I'm in Basecamp all the time. And so sometimes somebody will say, I emailed you about that thing for the project. Did you see it? I'm like, did you put it in Basecamp? They're like, no, I just sent an email. I'm like, well, then I haven't seen it. But I will see it if it's Basecamp, because then I know there's one place I can go that I can see what's going on. And so tools like that for me are so invaluable. And think, oh, Basecamp, but like, you're not doing development. No, we use this to just manage all of our projects that we're doing. We assign tasks. We have lists that we do. We have descriptions when we're talking about, oh, this show is going to come out. Well, what should we do for our first 3 episodes? Okay, well, what's left to do to get it ready in the CMS? All of this stuff goes right in there. It's amazing. And I'm always looking for great tools that can help, you know, streamline this. And the more, you know, it's an app for your phone. Well, you know what? That's great. But I would much rather have a web service, because then I can get to it from anywhere. And that's still, you know, there's that
the
flexibility.
Basecamp, you're using that for Archer and 5x5. And we use it for Happy Cog as well. And it's really gorgeous.
What do you use to coordinate and organize your, oh, well, I guess we should talk about this too.
A list apart is on the old Basecamp.
Yeah.
An event apart is on the old Basecamp. Bear in mind, some of the people connected with an event apart are like 7 operating systems back too, for various reasons. So
aren't you having one of those here in Austin?
We're having an event apart in Austin this month, September 22nd
to 24th.
Up. You're coming.
I am going to that.
You're coming to that. It's going to be amazing. Samantha Warren is going to be there. She's the designer who invented StyleTile. She works at Twitter. Sarah Parmenter, the Net Magazine Designer of the Year a couple of years back, and the founder of
She's
you
coming
know
from across the pond, I guess.
She's coming from across the pond. Luke Rebluski, CEO of Input Factory, author of Mobile First. Whitney Hess will be there. User experience consultant, writer, speaker. Jared Spool, the founder of the Unicorn Institute, co-founder of the Unicorn Institute, founder of User Interface Engineering, author of something like 25,000 articles on UX and usability. Chris Coyer, the creator of CSS Tricks and CodePen and about 50 other amazing things. Yeah, Chris reminds me, it's like you're seeing the car guys or something. He's like this completely down to earth, absolutely charismatic, no bullshit, working class type, sleeves rolled up guy who gets the whole room psyched and pumped about like advantages of SVG,
right? Like, right.
Like, you know, he's going to be talking about SVGs for everybody. And there are people who are project managers in the audience. Cause we, you know, an event apart is a holistic conference. It's like we have content strategy. We have a lot of design. We have a lot of front end development, but it's for anyone who makes or runs websites. And he, no matter what their discipline is, he gets them totally pumped about SVG. Even if they're not a developer or a designer, they'll go like, we should use SVG. Yeah, great. What do you do? I'm in marketing. But we should be using SVG on our website because I get it. We can have like responsive images that totally, you know, fill the screen and are like 1K and work in any device. I totally get it. Matt Marquis, speaking of responsive images, he's a designer developer at the Filament Group, and he works on A List Apart, and he's going to be doing, and he was the head of the responsive images group of the W3C, and he's doing a talk on the past, present, and future of responsive images. Jason Grigsby, the co-founder of Cloud4, will be doing mobile-first responsive web design. Derek Featherstone, the most entertaining accessibility person I've ever seen, will be doing the art of anticipation. Kate Kiefer-Lee from MailChimp, and it's just Kate Kiefer-Lee from our sponsor MailChimp, but unrelated, just happens to be Kate Kiefer-Lee, who created Voice and Tone, right? The style guide that everyone's looked at for creating a brand voice and all the different contexts in which the brand voice will interact with users and how you should address certain problems. She's going to be giving a talk on touchy subjects, creating content for sensitive situations. Josh Clark of Global Marxy is going to be doing Mind the Gap, designing in the space between devices.
That's
so
cool.
Not designing for the iPad, not designing for the Android device, not designing for your TV. And oh my gosh, there's stuff in there like an app that grabs stuff off the TV and puts it into your phone. You tap the phone against the TV and it puts, or an app where you start listening to iTunes. You're listening to iTunes on your device and you come into the office and you tap your phone against your desktop computer and it starts playing that tune in iTunes loud over your stereo system. Mm. It's like crazy stuff like that. There's a game from Google where you put multiple devices together and this racing game goes across them all. It's a really amazing show. There's every show we do sells out in advance. We have just a few seats left, but Event Apart is the show I started with Eric Meyer in December of 2005. And it's really, you haven't been, Dan. You haven't been to an Event Apart until now, right?
No, this is going to be my first. I don't know how that's possible. But, you know,
how is that possible?
It's weird.
It's very weird indeed. Well, we love Austin, and we have something amazing planned for Austin next year as well. But right now, still some seats available. Event Apart Austin, September 22nd to 24th. More information, of course. And thank goodness for the URL, aneventapart.com. You'd want to go to aneventapart.com to find out more information. And if your device is hiding URLs from you, then I guess Google an Event Apart. So there's that. And MailChimp is actually also a sponsor of An Event Apart because MailChimp is just awesome.
Nice guys.
They are nice guys.
So when you come out to do this thing.
Yes.
You fly out here. How you guys typically do it like, and I'm wondering about this because there's so much, you know, you talk about how you're not writing, you know, you're not writing HTML, you're not coding CSS anymore, but putting something like this together has got to be.
It's very time intensive. And Eric has been out for more than a year.
Yeah.
A family situation. So we have Marcy Eversole and Toby Molina, just the most amazing staff in the world. Marcy basically negotiates with the the places that house us. And, you know, she figures out where we should be and gets, you know, a contract that we can afford so we can put on the show and not have to be astronomical about it, and figures out the food and all this kind of stuff. And Toby and I work on the content together. And Toby also is our technical director. And like, I've been to other conferences where I go to speak, and like, right before I'm supposed to speak, that's when they do the sound check in front of the audience.
Oh, man.
It's like, so like that would never, Toby just, it's so professional. It's ridiculous. Steven is our latest member, Steven Venor. And he just basically takes a lot of stuff off Marcy's plate so that Marcy can be more strategic. So she will probably feel the same kind of pangs of being less hands-on soon. But what was your question?
I was just thinking, you know, all the stuff, all the moving parts that go into something like this, making it happen, coordinating all of it. I know whenever we've tried to just do like a basic meetup that's going to last an hour and a half, like that takes 2 weeks to plan it, you know? Something like this is just, God.
I think of it like a playlist too. You want to have we always want to have like the most exciting speakers we can find who are like the most advanced, but we don't want to have the same 12 speakers at every show, and we don't want to like lose new voices. So we're always looking for new voices and mixing them in with people that we know are going to make the audience happy. And then I sort of, you know, Toby and I like bang around, okay, we've got, maybe if we have these 8 people, what are we not covering and who should come first? And, you know, because you want to like ease people into the day and then like not blow their minds right away. And, but, you know, so like something that's more accessible to everyone gets, you know, it's kind of like when you start exercising, you start with some gentle, simple movements, you know, right, just like moving your hands around before you like, you know, before you're like doing tongue ups or whatever. I just made that up. That's where you lift your whole body.
Yeah,
with
your health, yeah.
Yeah, that would be, you'd be very popular, and that would be an amazing thing. But
certain crowds would reward you for that.
They would. Others would scorn you. So, wow, that derailed everything.
Yeah. But, so what's next for you in this show? What are you going to be doing next? What's up for you? What is the story here?
For this show?
Yeah, your special show. With the new red version of it, which is the best thing I've ever seen in my life, by the way.
The red just makes it.
Yeah.
I think I want to interview Jason Santa Maria, who just came out with a book on typography.
JSM.
We are going to have lots of amazing special guests. I want to try to find people who are in the center of controversies about our industry and controversies about the openness of the web and so on and so forth, because a lot of stuff's happening. I want to be able to respond quickly to it. Sometimes you're not even sure yourself. Like some people rush out a blog post if, let's say, there's a huge revelation about privacy violation or a woman at a company is being grotesquely mistreated. Before you write your blog post, maybe it's like good to have the people involved on the show talking. So I want to do more of that. I want to do some of the stuff that I've always done, which is, you know, find people who are making amazing apps, amazing websites, amazing content sites, and get them to talk about what they do. I think we can expand into other digital areas too, like photography, and content and music. But basically it's always going to be pretty web focused because, you know, how could it not be? This is what I've been doing for 20 years.
Right.
And it's the thing that connects us all. And it's the most amazing, shared medium, right? This is a medium that, it's a medium that a genius can create great art on. And it's a medium that, you know, your kid can make a funny little cartoon on, and just, it's open to everyone. And fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. So that's what we're going to be doing. And thank you so much for having me back. And thank you so much for being the first guest on the Relaunch
show. Love being
here,
man. Totally love being here.
We really should do some 90s slang before we go. I mean, I said homie don't play that.
Yeah.
There's rad.
Wait, did that come from the 90s? I guess it did.
It came from the 90s.
Talk to the hand.
Talk to the hand.
Well, like,
booyah.
Booyah. Whatever.
Cha-ching. Crunk.
Wasn't,
I'm down. Remember, I'm down?
Yeah, I'm down. What about not?
Not, oh my God.
Psych. Whenever I say psych to people, they're like, what does that mean? Like, it means like not, I guess.
Is Jack in from the 90s?
Oh, no. Oh, maybe.
We're jacking into the net. There's a whole bunch of early internet. The kid and I are watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer now. I never watched it when it was during the time that it was out. And so we're really enjoying it.
Yeah.
There's some like early web stuff that's kind of true and very funny. Super dated.
As if.
As if is good. Yeah, that came from, oh man. I love that movie too.
Clueless.
Clueless, yeah. And Paul, our idiot brother.
Yeah, right.
This is sad. This is like, I sound like just like people in the old folks' home. He played the trombone. It was Tommy Dorsey's boy singer. It was the boy singer with Tommy Dorsey. This is just sad.
Yeah.
Damn Skippy.
Yeah, damn Skippy.
Dead presidents.
Going postal.
Going postal. Eat My Shorts. Came from
Simpsons.
Simpsons.
Yeah.
Getting Jiggy. Popularized by Will Smith.
Yeah, I just introduced my son to Will Smith. Not personally, but the music.
Oh, the music. You introduced your son to Will Smith's music?
Yeah, he's into that. He's more into, because of Guardians of the Galaxy, he's now all of a sudden like realizing how cool like old David Bowie and 70s music and stuff like that is. Like,
dude, I get that.
Yeah.
Old David Bowie from the 70s. Yeah. Totally get. Yeah. Johnny Cash, old hip hop, but not, actually, you could just do a whole thing on Prince. He made up his own language, I think.
Yeah.
Your body's slamming. Let's get to ramming. You've got the look.
Yeah. Especially
off
with
hook. Off the hook.
Off the hook, yeah. That's a good one. Fat with PH.
Right. Popo.
What's that one?
Police.
Really?
Is that from the 90s?
I don't know what. I haven't heard that one.
The Shiz?
Yeah, that's a good one.
The Shiz. Schwing.
Mm-hmm. Are you just coming up with these or are you cheating and looking in the list? So people can go. I just have to say, I have to slip into my host's or co-host mode. Yes. 5x5.tv/bigwebshow.
That's where this show will
is.
That's where this show is going to be. Correct. Oh my gosh, we never settled on theme music.
Oh yeah, what do you want to do about that? Well, we'll figure it out.
I want to use it. We'll figure it out. Okay, but in a few days, this will be up. Maybe Monday, Tuesday.
Be out in a few minutes.
Oh, so we won't have theme music this time.
We could use your old theme music. We could pull your existing one. By the way, for those who, if you subscribed to this a long time ago, and this show is back. Well, now you know why. But what we did is we went and imported the shows that you did while you were away.
Right.
So it's a complete catalog of shows is there.
Right. Everything's still here.
And that's it. And
everything's at 5x5. Yep.
And you're on Twitter.
I'm on the Twitters at Zeldman, and you're on the Twitters
at Dan Benjamin.
Dan Benjamin.
I'm looking forward to the new shows. I can't wait to hear it. I'm always have been a listener and will continue to be one. And this has been great. Thank you for
likewise,
having me.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's another one. All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Peace out.
Bye.
Bye.